You're listening to EA Radio. I'm Afterburner Al. Joining me in the studio is Guy Balestrieri, and he was a senior master sergeant, retired now, of course, in the Air Force with the 440th Airlift Wing. Was based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Was now moved on to Pope Air Force Base, and he was a propulsion flights supervisor. Sounds like a lot of...
I'm not sure what that means.
I am honored to be in the studio right now. I tell you what.
And you don't even know why.
You shouldn't be.
You have worked on a lot of airplanes that the Air Force has, and you were telling us that there's only one left, but let's start at the beginning. You started with, as you said,
recips. First, the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
And you kind of gravitated to Dougie down there because that was the first airplane you worked on.
The first aircraft I ever worked on was a EC-47N. In Tan Son Nhut Air Base in Vietnam.
And how long? They actually had an EC version of that airplane?
EC, electronic counter warfare, and it was
all tubes.
The guts of the airplane was worth more than the airplane. Pick up a heartbeat at 20,000 feet.
Wow.
What are some of the challenges of fixing reciprocating engines in a war zone?
Dirt, sand.
The usual.
I'll bet you thought as you're laying on your back under there some night when it's cold and wet and you're trying to fix something, thinking, boy, yeah, this is it. I'm really living now.
On the 47, your best friend was the crew chief solvent. Go underneath the fuselage, hit the pitot, get out that fuel, and nice and cold.
Right. Okay. So see the world and, fix engines in remote places that don't have many accoutrements.
Right. A lot of work with the 47s, but those normally would just go up from your home base, come back to your home base. Where you got into the 123s, the C-7s, you went out to areas where you didn't think you could land.
What are some of the things they would put on these airplanes as they headed off into the war zone?
Well, we had a run every morning where two 123s out of Tan Son Nhut would take off with a load of milk. Take them out to all the forward bases and drop off milk every single morning, two of them.
Milkman takes on a whole new meaning there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yes, but a lot of other things. I mean, we flew villagers around. I was on a 123 that had a baby elephant one time.
Oh, didn't they make a movie about that, Operation Dumbo Drop?
Dumbo Drop, right. It's basically the same thing, but that wasn't about us. The one we had was a very tiny elephant.
It was a mini elephant.
Now, I was sent a slideshow of a C-130 that had crashed in the Iraqi desert, and they had, before they blew it up, they changed out the engines. Let's just talk briefly about how fast can you change out an engine? Let's say, just say, in a shop at the base.
You mean just pull the engine off?
Pull the engine off and have the other one ready to go.
If I pull it off as a package, I mean the propeller still on the engine, and pull it that way, I can have it down in an hour. I can have a new one up in about 3 to 4 hours, maybe 3 hours, but not run, just up and ready to go.
That's pretty fast.
And it's almost better than your oil change.
Yeah, it takes me about an hour to do that, too.
And how many people does this take to pull this off?
Well, you usually have a crane operator, two people up top, so at least a crew of three. Four is preferable.
And four guys underneath, and you go, catch!
Hopefully not.
And I think I asked you how long you had served.
I had just shy of 36 years. I had 4 years active duty, mostly in Southeast Asia. And then I had the remainder of the time with the 440th as a full-timer. I worked out there 7 days a week.
And you are from the Milwaukee area. How were you able to land back at the same base?
Well, when I got off active duty, they had just recently gotten 130s. They got rid of the 440th, got rid of the old 119s. They got 130s, and they did not have any propeller mechanics. So they called me at home and basically offered me a job. This would have been back in April of 72.
And they even asked you back after the base was closing.
Yes, I retired in November of 02, and because of the great turnover and still trying to fly missions, they asked me to come back out of retirement for a year, which I did.
Looking back at all the airplanes that you had worked on and at the Air Force had, what do you think was the most capable?
Well, probably the C-47 with commercial DC-3. It's probably one of the few aircraft that has ever paid for itself.
What was your favorite airplane to work on?
Oh, boy. 130, because I spend more time with that than anything else.
Yeah. And typically, when you are working on the propulsion area, what are you changing out most? What are you working on? What do pilots seem to wear out the most?
His patience.
Yeah, that too. Shorten the headset. No, probably in the old recips, one of the biggest problems was just governing RPM. Low RPM on the DC-3 or the C-47 and the 123 was really pain in the butt for the mechanic.
Chains and spark plugs.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you a question. I have an uncle who was a, I guess it was a 121 mechanic during Vietnam. He flew Hurricane Hunters out of Guam. And he often told this story, and I want to know if this is true, that sometimes the pilots decided they would like a little break, like maybe a three-day break. And on certain hops, when they knew they were landing in certain bases, he would be instructed to take a pencil and make a little mark on the turbocharger housing. And oddly enough, when they would land, they would discover cracks in the turbocharger housing. And then, well, sorry, we can't leave. We're going to be here a couple days while we wait for a replacement. Now, is that true?
I don't know if that one's true, but I know we had gone to recover aircraft in different parts of the country, in Vietnam or Australia, New Zealand, different areas. And there were times that you got to a slowdown in work or call back to base saying, hey, I need a generator or something, just to keep the time where you are, because it was so nice where you are. It was so nice to get away from where you've been.
Oh, I can only imagine that.
One of the most popular internet chain letters is the squawk list that is handed down from pilot to mechanic. So what are some of your favorites that you've heard as far as a write-up from a crew?
Propeller turning backwards, I think, was the funniest thing I ever saw in my life.
Okay.
And, or wobbling. And what we used to do on C-123s, the unit I was with, the dome, the very front of the propeller dome would be painted with a yellow circle and then a dot in the middle. And we used to put the dot off center.
On purpose.
On purpose.
That would mess with them.
Oh, yes, because then you get a wobbly propeller.
And how often did you fly on with these missions?
I didn't have to fly a lot in Southeast Asia. I was on two aircraft where we took ground fire. We did have to ditch one time. But most of the time I was stationed right at Tonsonut or in the Delta area, but go out and recover aircraft wherever they were. Salvage what you could.
One thing I was kind of curious about, how often did they move air bases around? Because you could make them out of just, you should put some metal plates down, yeah, and you have an air base.
Yeah, we used to call it PSP, perforated steel plate, and you just lay it down for a runway, or most of the time it was just laid down for a parking spot. But the main air bases, they stayed the same place all the time.
I guess weather was a constant factor, even for mechanics. I mean, it's out there pouring rain, and you're trying to fix an engine.
We used to carry spare socks in our toolboxes.
And so what are some of the insects that were the most onerous in that zone?
There was a beetle that had to be about an inch wide and about 3 inches long, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was called, a rice beetle or something like that. And we used to see those all the time, and they were just the ugliest thing you'd ever see.
Just gross you out, huh?
Yes.
And one of the things about Vietnam is that it seemed like the war was going on all throughout the country, and you were there during the Tet Offensive.
Yes.
And what was it like to be in a somewhat of a rear echelon area, and suddenly here's the war outside your bivouac?
Well, I know I spent a couple nights, you just stayed where you were as much as possible. I spent a couple nights sleeping underneath engine dollies or propeller dollies, I don't know, just on the floor out of the way.
Something heavy.
Oh, yes.
Something,
yes.
Something dense.
Yeah. We used to transport a lot of our flights. You'd put the big fuel bladders in the back and then fly fuel to different forward operating bases. And prior to Tet, that used to be a great place to catch some Z's at night because it was cold. You know, first waterbed, just great. After Tet, you didn't sleep on those anymore.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
So this is your chance to say a few good words about the rear echelon folks that don't get the glory of up the front seat and the perception of most people.
Yeah. Well, you got to realize one thing, that everybody that's military does their thing by helping everybody else in the military. My job was to keep the airplanes in line. The crew was to keep the airplanes flying, deliver what they needed, when they needed, where they needed. And that's basically what we did.
And you just boiled it down to practically nothing.
This is one interesting thing about Guy. When is the last time you attended this convention?
I have never been here before.
Oh, my goodness.
My unit, the 440th, had aircraft up here every year through the entire shows for as long as I can remember, and I have never been here before.
Guy Balestrieri is retired from the U.S. Air Force. He's a senior master sergeant and head of the he was a propulsion flight supervisor with the 440th Airlift Wing, which was based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, now moved on to North Carolina. You're listening to EAA Radio.